compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Okay, welcome back. And just remember, if you would like to send me a message on Twitter, my address there is at Patrick Madrid. I'm looking for your messages, and I see them during the program, so thanks for that. Maybe hit follow, and we can stay in closer touch that way. Also, if you want to send me an email, go to relevantradio.com/Patrick. There's an amazing video I posted on Twitter. It shows this, appears to be a young woman, who's just raiding the sunglasses area of a store and just brazenly walking out. And this is happening with increasing frequency, where stores just stand by and watch as they get looted. You really need to see this. It's shocking. And laws are being passed in certain places that say, well, if it's, you know, below $1,000, we're not going to bother to investigate it. The police won't come. And so people know this, and so they just go in and they snag whatever they want, presumably under $1,000, because they know they won't get caught. So my comment on this one is, any company that willingly permits this deserves to go out of business. I mean, why should they stay in business and pass the cost of such a bad decision on to you as the consumer? You need to see the video to understand what I'm saying. My address there is at Patrick Madrid, but you tell me what you think. Seems to me that if the store is just going to allow that to happen, if that's company policy, well, then you deserve to go out of business, if you ask me. Somebody else pointed out a thought that didn't occur to me, but I think it's actually a very wise thought, and that is, that's another reason why you should not be, you know, be really careful before you buy something on Facebook or eBay or some other place, because a lot of these things could easily be stolen from a store like this, and then they pop up in some other setting. And without realizing it, you might even be buying stolen goods. There's no way to know, really, but it's something to think about anyway. 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. Let's get the audio machine cranked up, Thomas. We have some audio here. This is of Jen Psaki, the outgoing press secretary. And here's what she had to say to people who are really very anxious because of that baby formula shortage that you've been hearing about. Suddenly now, within the last week or so, huge, huge parts of the country are left without baby formula. And there are various supply chain reasons and factory closings and things like that that have to do with it. But the fact is, there are some moms who can't breastfeed their children, and their newborn babies really need this formula, and certain kinds of formula in particular cases, they can't get them. And it's a real crisis. And while El Presidente is busy blaming Vladimir Putin and the war in Ukraine and all sorts of other things for this problem, this is what Jen Psaki had to say when she was asked about this question in a press conference yesterday.
Since you said it was a public health question, which agency should that question be directed to? Just the very practical, immediate question of, if you can't find formula and you need it for your baby to eat, what should they be doing?
We would certainly encourage any parent who has concerns about their child's health or well-being to call their doctor or pediatrician.
Talk about sidestepping the question. That wasn't the question. The question wasn't, do you have concerns about your child's health and well-being? The question is, how are we going to get some formula for these kids that need formula? How are we going to get that? Well, go talk to your doctor. Kind of a non-answer. So if you are in that position, you have certainly my sincerest empathy in that. And I'm not entirely sure what the alternatives are. But hopefully this is a crisis that will simmer down soon. I certainly hope and pray that it will. 888-914-9149. All right, now there's this news story I want to share with you, and this is from The Sun. Now, The Sun is a UK tabloid, but every so often, what's the old saying? Even a blind hog can find an acorn now and then. So even The Sun, even though it's a tabloid, even they can come up with a good story now and then, and I thought this was worth your time to think about. This is scientists who are able to revive dead eyes. I know this sounds kind of gross, but here it is. The authors of the study said the discovery raises the question of whether brain death, as it's currently defined, is truly irreversible. Brain death is when someone is no longer able to survive without life support and able to breathe on their own. So a science team demonstrated that this could be used on other issues like the central nervous system, like the brain or the spine, or eyes. Lead author Dr. Fatima Abbas of the Moran Eye Center at the University of Utah said, "We were able to wake up photoreceptor cells in the human macula, which is part of the retina responsible for our central vision and our ability to see fine detail and color." Just imagine, I don't know what that would have looked like, a couple of eyes in a dish. It's kind of a gross out, if you ask me. In eyes obtained up to 5 hours after an organ donor's death, these cells responded to bright light, colored lights, and even very dim flashes of light. So these are eyes that the owner had been dead now for 5 hours, and these eyes had been removed, I guess, from the owner, and they're studying them, and they see that the eyes can still respond to these light stimuli. A body of controversial science has been looking at how to reverse the neuron activity and breathe life into the organs of those who have died. This study, published in the journal Nature, follows Yale University sparking life into the brains of dead pigs in 2019. Into the brains of dead pigs! Scientists were able to switch on the blood circulation of the huge organs 4 hours after the pigs had been slaughtered. But what they were not able to do, whereas those from the University of Utah have been able to do, is create communication between the neurons. So the research team, they were able to revive these light-sensing neurons or photoreceptors in these eyes that had died. I don't have any other way to put it. These eyes had died. We can stop with the music now. Thank you.
That sounds good.
So this is really fascinating stuff, and it's interesting to see how we're making strides in that direction. Who knows where this will lead? But to my knowledge, at least, that's never been done before. So check it out. I have an email here that comes in from Andy. And Andy says, let's see. A woman does have the choice of what she does with her body. Once she makes the choice to engage in intercourse, she implicitly accepts all the outcomes that are possible of that choice, including pregnancy. She and the possible father must accept whatever the results of their actions are. That's responsibility. He says, when this results in pregnancy, the new human being who is formed is no longer her body. Its DNA is 50% hers and 50% the father's, a unique human being with its own rights, including the right to life. Even though the baby develops within her body, it is not genetically speaking her. Well, you're right about all that, certainly. And these are points that we make endlessly on Relevant Radio because people need to know that. It's not like your kidney. Your kidney has all the same DNA that you do because it's part of you. But the little bitty baby who's in gestation, who's in his mommy's tummy, has different DNA. It's a different person. Could be a different blood type even. And that's at the crux of this issue of abortion. This email comes in from Mary. She says, I just got back from shopping and the girl monitoring the self-checkout line brought up the abortion issue. How often does that happen? I can't imagine being in the grocery shop, the self-checkout line, and having the clerk who's there to scan, you know, something for you or to put your birthday in if you're trying to buy wine or something like that. I can't imagine that person would bring up abortion, but yet it happened to Mary. She says, I was caught completely off guard, and while I have secular arguments for being pro-life, I said nothing, mainly because I had a cart full and I had to get home, and I was frankly surprised at her boldness. So she says she recommends warning people this issue may come up anytime to have the secular argument ready. My crucifix and miraculous medal were prominently on my chest, yet she felt it necessary to bring this up. Perilous times we are in. Well, yeah, that's true. I wish you had told me, Mary, because I would really be interested in knowing, what was it that she said, number one, and what was it that prompted her to say that? I wonder if maybe she saw your crucifix and perhaps she thought something like, or she said something like, get your rosaries off my ovaries or some silly thing like that. But in the moment, I know what it's like when you don't have a good answer. And you look back on it later and say, oh, if only I had said this, if only I had said that. Why didn't I say this? I mean, hindsight is always 20/20 vision. That's true. But yeah, I agree with you. It's good to kind of have rehearsed in your mind what you will say so that when the time comes, if somebody challenges you, you'll be ready. And that's, it says so in 1 Peter 3:15, to always be ready to give a defense to anyone who asks you for a reason for the hope that is in you, but do it with gentleness and respect. So always be ready means that you've got, you spent some time trying to think about, well, if this comes up, if somebody says this, what would I say? That's a good thing to do. It's a good way to be prepared. This email comes in from Phyllis, who's listening on our San Diego station, 1000 AM KCEO. She says, the issue of Roe versus Wade and the Supreme Court of the United States leak has entered the workplace. Is this a conversation for the workplace in a formal setting? The suggestion was for the topic to be part of a diversity and inclusion discussion or a staff water cooler discussion. She says, I work for a government agency and we are already being encouraged to use the new LGBTQ pronouns in our email signatures. Granted, I live in California, which has always leaned toward the liberal side. Actually, I'll interject here. No, it hasn't always leaned toward the liberal side. There was a time when California was rock solid conservative. President Ronald Reagan used to be the governor of California. That's how conservative it used to be. But things have changed. She says, even though California has always leaned toward the liberal side, but as a taxpayer, I find it increasingly difficult to refrain from telling these agencies to stop, or I'm sorry, to stay in the confines of their civil service lanes and just do the jobs for which they have been hired. What is your opinion? Well, my opinion is you're right. You know, if the department is charged with taking care of the roadways or taking care of the waterways or taking care of whatever, that should be its primary importance. It doesn't need to be social engineering on the side. Although this is, you have to understand something, Phyllis. This is the way it is now. This is the way it is, and it's coming from the top. So not only, if you want to go to the federal level for a moment, not only do we see the spectacle of our embassies in around the world flying not only the American flag, but flying the gay pride flag at times, and our embassies. And that's something that's ordered from the top down. And the same is true at the state level. You've got Governor Newsom, who's all about this stuff. He loves this stuff. And so he is one of the driving forces in the state of California for these agencies to start doing these things. And many people who work in these agencies feel like you do, but they feel if they were to speak up and say something, they'd probably get fired. I don't know how easy it is to fire a state employee. It might be really easy to fire a state employee if you just say that the person is homophobic or transphobic or something like that. Maybe that would cut through all the red tape and you could get fired. But if you do other things on the job as a state employee, maybe it might be very difficult to fire you. I don't know. But I would say, if you're looking for my advice, you ask for my opinion. My opinion would be, do your job as best you can. Try to stay out of the politics as best you can. I agree with you. When I see people who in their social media profile give pronouns, I automatically just sort of think that person is going down the wrong path. I make value judgments about people who do that because I can see that they're maybe not thinking as clearly as they should. So that would be my thought on that. Thank you. Let's go now to Ron, who's listening in Green Bay. He's listening on our 1050 AM station, WJOK. He says, thank you for your commentary on contraception in the past. My additional question is, if I had a vasectomy 38 years ago, how do I get past this sin? Can I ever get past this sin? Every time I have sexual relations, I'm committing a sin. At 60 plus years old, a reversal is not a viable solution. As a side note, at my age, that operation is probably the worst regret in my life. Yeah, I can understand why, especially if, because 38 years have gone by and you haven't had any children in that time. And so we're essentially, if I've got it right, you were in your early to mid-20s when you had this vasectomy. And all of those years in the prime of your life, not that you're not necessarily in the prime of your life anymore. I used to think that being 60 was old. Now I know better. It's a matter of, you know, your frame of mind. But yeah, you had all those childbearing years where you could have fathered children And those children would now be growing up around you. They would be in their 20s and maybe even into their 30s. And I could understand why that weighs on you. Why? Because all those opportunities to accept the precious gift of life that God may have wanted to bless you with, you close the door on that. So you ask, how can you get past this sin? Well, remember, first of all, that God loves you and he wants you to be happy. And he provides a way for you to be happy, which is freedom from sin. And when you repent, he will restore you. He will forgive you. Now, you didn't say in your email, so I can only read between the lines here. I don't know whether or not you've ever gone to confession for this. So I'm assuming you probably have. But if you haven't, get thee to confession. That'd be the first step in healing this. So if you haven't gone to confession yet, and maybe you already have, but for what it's worth, go to confession. Now you may say, well, I already have gone to confession. I did confess this. How do I get past this? Well, this is one of those vagaries of human nature, and I wish I had an answer for it. Sometimes I have to deal with it myself. And that is when you look back on your past sins and you feel a sense of regret and shame, or you feel like, how could I have done that? Why did I do that? What was I thinking? I would never do that, so why did I do that? You know, all these things that we can't help as humans but feeling. That's understandable. But what I would recommend is that you do what the great saints tell us, and that is bring those feelings to God. If you have a hard time forgiving yourself, if you have a hard time, you know, feeling as though you can be forgiven, even though maybe intellectually you know that you're forgiven, if you've gone to confession and you heard those blessed words of absolution, nonetheless, ask God to help you in your emotions. Ask him to heal your emotions. Because the emotions are where those concerns reside. And sometimes you feel it more acutely than you do at other times. That's natural. And when you say every time you have sexual relations, are you committing a sin? Well, no, you're not. In a strict sense, you're not. Because if you have asked for forgiveness, then you are forgiven. And you're living with the consequences of your sin, which means that you are, when you have relations with your wife, you are, because of this bad decision that you made 38 years ago, you are not open to the possibility that God would bless you with life. Now, I realize at your age now, the likelihood of that happening, I'm guessing your wife is probably of a similar age. So it's probably beyond the point now where you would be able to have a child. And keep in mind that what the church says is simply what God says, and that is to be open to life, to be open to the possibility that God might bless you with a child. Doesn't mean that you have to intend for a child to come along. Doesn't mean that you have to intend for conception to take place. But you can't do anything that would prevent it from happening, and that's what you did 38 years ago. So what about the issue of whenever the two of you are together, are you committing a sin? Well, in a strict sense, no. You are in a kind of way kind of living with the quote-unquote benefit. It's not really a benefit, but with the quote-unquote benefit of the sin that you committed before. But at the same time, you have repented of that sin, I would presume. So it's not as though you're sinning. You're now dealing with the aftermath of your sin. And the aftermath of the sin is that it has rendered the marriage act sterile. So I would think it probably would also have the effect of lessening your happiness in those moments, because you realize that it's missing something and that there is a God component to all this that's no longer there. So maybe that's part of the penance that you're doing for this sin, because you're realizing with these pangs of conscience, which is why you wrote to me in the first place, and I'm glad you did. So you say that this is probably the worst regret in your life. I can understand why. And what about a reversal? Well, there are reversals available. Now, you may say, well, my wife is beyond the point of having children. So even if I did get a reversal, we're not going to have children. So the first thing I would say to that is, number one, well, possibly, you know, who knows what God has in store? Sarah, the wife of Abraham, was blessed with a child in her old age. So Elizabeth and Zechariah, John the Baptist's parents, they were blessed with a child in their extreme old age. So it's not impossible. It's not likely, but it's not impossible. But here's the reason I would suggest to you that you do have the reversal. Here's why. Because it would be a form of restitution. It would be a form of trying to rectify, trying to make right what you made wrong by having that vasectomy. And you may say, yeah, but it's painful. Yeah, true. I can only imagine, you know, never have been through it, but I can only imagine. But if you were to look at it that way, you could say, yeah, even though the likelihood of having a child is basically nil outside of a miracle, even though having a reversal won't have any practical effect on the possibility of children, nonetheless, it seems to me it would be a virtuous and meritorious thing, because then you could perform an act of restitution. You're putting back the way it should have been all along. And that's a good thing in my view. So it's not as though the church requires you to do that, but I think in the spirit of true repentance and to help you maybe overcome these feelings that you're experiencing right now, that if you did that, it would be reparative in many ways. I'll leave it at that. We're going to take a break, and I'm coming back with more of your emails. I am available for phone calls. If you want to call me, my number is 888-914-9149. I've got a stack of emails taller than me, so I'll be doing those as well. But you can call if you want to, 888-914-9149. I'll be right back. Notre Dame Federal Credit Union is a member of the Catholic Credit Unions of America. You can find more information and your local Catholic Credit Union at relevantradio.com/banking.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
All right. Welcome back. The Go-Go's, Thomas. Young Thomas, you don't know who this group is, do you? You weren't even born when these people were making their music.
No idea.
Look up the Go-Go's.
All right,
they were what used to be called New Wave back in the early 80s. So there. Let's see. Let's go to Matthew in Alameda, California. Hello, Matthew.
Hi, Patrick. I was just wondering if you attend daily mass.
When I can, but I normally can't because I'm doing this program, and the masses available where I live are happening while I'm doing the show. But when it happens that I can go to mass on a weekday or a Saturday, if it's available to me, I do try to do that, yes. Why do you ask?
Okay. I was just curious. I just started going to daily mass, and again, after a short period of time, I've had a real bumpy life. That's a long story, but it helps me a lot, and I was just curious to know if somebody like you, maybe you don't need it. I don't know.
Oh, well, au contraire, mon ami. No, I need daily mass as much as anybody, and you can only benefit. So I'm so happy to hear that you're going to daily mass. That's great. But if you are in a position where you're able to go to daily mass, it's a great thing to do, a great habit to get into. But if you're not able to go to daily mass, sometimes that's just how life is. So I try to take advantage of the opportunity anytime I can. But normally I'm here talking with you. So when you go to mass, maybe you can make a communion intention for me. I'd sure appreciate that.
I certainly will, Patrick. I appreciate all that you and Relevant Radio does for America and around the world. I think it's a wonderful thing.
Thank you, Matthew. Well, that perks us up a lot to hear that. It's good to know that it's helpful to you. Thank you. Let's go to Juan now, listening in California. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Patrick. It was kind of hard to pick a question. I'll be honest with you. I do have a lot of questions.
That's okay. I've got some time.
Yeah, my main question is Bitcoin. Right now, I know it's a new thing. You know, we already have our form of currency here in the United States. Knowing how gambling truly is, and, you know, my grandma, you know, they go to the casino, whatever, you know, that's something of true gambling. But Bitcoin, not knowing, you know, even it not being a I guess you can say, a proper formal way of buying something like gasoline.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're still able to buy gas with a dollar bill. I mean, I don't see right. people going with Bitcoin for gas or chips, you know.
Now, are you talking about the tangible quality of cash versus the intangible quality of Bitcoin, which is just pixels? It's just electrons in a computer. It's not an actual thing. Is that what you mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Because, you know, a lot of people in 2000, you know, the biggest thing was, all electronics, you know, going out kind of deal. You know, if let's say if we were to predict something like that to happen, that being that 1% of it failing, would that be considered gambling? Like, because I thought of maybe investing in cryptocurrency, but it's kind of like, you know, as a young 23-year-old, you know, I'm still experiencing the world as it is. So,
right.
When you see futuristic aspects of that, you know, I mean, it's kind of hard to go off of that.
Yeah, I've been seeing news headlines lately. So like, let's say in the last couple of days, that suggests that Bitcoin is really having a lot of problems and losing value and people are panicking. Now, I don't know I have no Bitcoin holdings myself at all. I'm not even sure I fully understand it. I have a basic knowledge of it, I think, but it's not something that's ever interested me. You know, so the whole blockchain technology and how it relates to digital currency, it's just never captured my fancy. So I don't really know that much about it. But you ask if it's a form of gambling. I would put it this way. It's certainly a gamble if you are investing your money in something that could lose all of its value. So it's like it's a gamble, like the stock market is inherently a gamble. When you buy something, you buy a share in a company, it's possible that your value could go up. It's also possible your value could evaporate. And you've gambled away your money, hoping that it would increase, but it doesn't. And then you lose your investment. So is that what you mean? Like, is it a form of gambling in that sense? Or do you mean, is it a form of like going to the racetrack or betting on, you know, roulette wheels or something? I'm not sure which form of gambling you have in mind.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, I'm kind of trying to narrow it down just to straight gambling because, you know, as a humble person, I'm a humble worker, you know. So if I'm putting my money in there, I'd want to know for sure. There's a kind of like, you know, how people have security deposits, you know, that mm-hmm. you know, there's something that they can depend on, even if it does go down, you know. Because I know how the stock market works too. Or, you know, if they lose money, you lose money if you invest, kind of deal. So
yeah,
I mean, that's kind of the thing too. And I know that, you know, from investing. You know, when you invest, it's a little bit different from gambling, but I know that in a way, I mean, just terminology, I guess you could say, like gambling in general, you know, I mean,
yeah.
Because me, I am Catholic, and religious, you know, so when I do look at the world's perspectives and through my own perspective, it's, you know, I kind of want to stay humble. I don't want to, you know, follow in other people's footsteps just because other people are following, you know.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's wise. Yeah, you're at 23 years old. That's very wise. Not a lot of 23-year-olds know that. Well, maybe here's some thoughts that can guide your decisions. Number one is ask yourself, are you laying up treasure in heaven? And that would include things like, I mean, are you allocating some of your money for the poor? Are you a regular donor at your parish? Do you help out people who need help in physical ways? I mean, they need food, they need a place to live. So if you're laying up treasure in heaven, if that's part of your so-called investment portfolio, if we're looking at it from an eternal perspective, then that would be one base that you would definitely want to make sure that you're covering that and be generous, obviously. So at the same time, if you're paying your bills, you're covering all your bases and you're helping with the poor, you're laying up treasure in heaven in that sense, and you still have some discretionary money left over that you'd like to invest. Well, there's nothing sinful about investing, say, in the stock market, as an example. I don't know about Bitcoin. I don't know how safe of an investment it is. It may be a terribly unsafe investment for all we know. Who knows? Maybe it's going to be the future. I remember reading and hearing stories about people who said, yeah, the automobile, it's just a flash in the pan. It's not, nothing's going to happen. It's just a fluke. And look at it now. I mean, the car became, you know, we can't live without them. Some people said that about radio at one time. Some people said that about motion pictures at one time, and they were wrong because these things really did get very big. But some people also said that about MySpace back in the day, and MySpace has gone away. It didn't catch on. So it's hard for me to know whether or not the blockchain technology and Bitcoin, et cetera, are going to turn out to be the next big thing. And that could happen. But in the meantime, maybe after you've covered all your bases and you're laying up some treasure in heaven and you're wisely allocating your resources, if you thought, well, I'd like to grow my money if that's possible, so I'll put some in the stock market or I'll put some in Bitcoin and we'll see what happens. That to me seems like a wise approach. What would be unwise would be if you weren't taking care of the important things, if you weren't meeting your obligations and paying your bills and you weren't doing anything to help the poor, and you are putting everything into, whether it's the stock market or Bitcoin or some other thing, that to me would be, your priorities would be out of whack, because the important things that have priority are not being taken care of. And what would happen if you lost all your money, if the bottom fell out of Bitcoin or the stock market? Then you're not able to take care of your obligations. So to use a kind of a parallel, Jesus said, put first the kingdom of heaven and all these other things will be added unto you. So if you took that approach, it seems to me you're going to be in the perfect position, whether Bitcoin goes up or down or goes away, doesn't matter. You're going to be doing the right thing regardless. And you'll be using that extra discretionary income that you have available to, quote unquote, gamble with without jeopardizing your obligations.
Okay. Okay, Patrick, thank you. I actually appreciate, you know, the kind words of you calling me wise. I have been told that. And I'm not going to promote anything. I kind of want to wrap it up because I know, you only have an hour or so. So if anything, I am promoting a book. And because of you influencing me, I am going to take another step into actually doing maybe my own podcast.
Hmm. Yeah, that's a noble quest to share what you know with other people. And the older you get, the more you will know. So I wish you all success in your efforts to share the truth with others.
Yeah, thank you. From you telling me about, you know, the correct investments, I truly believe, you know, just from what you've told me, that investing in maybe a podcast, knowing that, you know, it's based on my own actions, you know, that'd be a safe investment.
It could be. It's hard to say. I'll leave you with this thought. Back or probably around the time you were born, even a little bit before that, it wasn't podcasting, it was blogging. And there was a time when everybody and his brother had a blog and everybody was blogging and some people were trying to make a go of it. Now, some people did make a go of it and they could make a financial, they could make a living. Most people, they blogged for a while, then they gave it up because they realized that for whatever reason, they were not going to make any money or that nobody was listening, and they just kind of got tired of it. Everybody and his brother has a podcast right now. Everybody is podcasting. Now, some of the podcasts are probably really good and really useful. A lot of them probably aren't. Of course, don't tell that to the person who's doing the podcasting. And I think the same kind of winnowing effect is going to happen with podcasts over time that happened with blogging. So at one time, everybody and his brother had a blog, and now most people really don't. They're on Facebook or they're doing other things, which, you know, kind of took over where blogs left off. Who knows what will happen to podcasts? But if I had to guess, I would think something similar will happen. So for what it's worth, I wouldn't invest too heavily in something that may be passé 3, 4, 5 years from now. I wouldn't invest too much right away anyway in something that may not because you're not great and not because you don't have a good message, but back when everybody and his brother had a blog, you know, you might have a blog and only 5 people are reading it. And that, you know, you can't make a living on that. So I would just say exercise prudence and see if you do a podcast like everyone else is doing right now, If you see it's beginning to get traction, it's starting to work, you're starting to get listeners, it can be monetized, great, keep going as far as, you know, you can prudently go. But recognize that this too may also be kind of a fad, the way that blogging turned out to be kind of a fad. And it's not to say that there aren't really good blogs. There are. And there's some people who are very talented at blogging. And they do very well. So it's not as though everybody who tried it was dumb or anything like that. We just didn't know which way it was going to go. So those are some thoughts. We're going to take a break. And we have more phone calls straight ahead. Please don't forget that today is the Feast of Our Lady of Fatima. And the U.S. bishops have called upon us to fast and especially pray for peace in our world and the end to legal abortion. And you can do that by joining us today at 7 p.m. Central with the Family Rosary Across America in praying for these intentions. More information about that at relevantradio.com. I'll be right back. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio Line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149.
If you're wondering why everything costs so much more now, inflation is just going insane. There's an interesting article. It's at reason.com. It's by Eric Boehm, B-O-E-H-M. And it purports, this is the theory anyway, that it's the COVID stimulus checks that made inflation worse. And at first when I saw that, I thought, nah, that can't be the case. But I read through it and it actually makes some sense that the vast amounts of money that were dumped into society in the form of the stimulus checks at the height of COVID, that there seems to be a cause and effect relationship between that and inflation. So if you're interested in how that might work, check it out. It's at reason.com. COVID stimulus checks worsened inflation. We would normally have that for you on the show Twitter feed, which you can access at the show page, relevantradio.com/Patrick, but having a little bit of an issue with that Twitter feed today. So we'll be back in action on Monday, that's for sure. Let's go to Mark now in Appleton, Wisconsin. Good morning, Mark, and thank you for waiting so patiently.
You're welcome, Patrick. Thank you for it's a pleasure to talk with you. My
thank
question
you.
Is a follow-up to the email you were talking about just a little while ago regarding the gentleman who had the vasectomy 38
yeah.
years ago.
Mm-hmm.
My situation is a little different, that I've been married 40 years. I have 5 children. And I had a vasectomy after my 5th one was born, maybe 6 months later,
mm-hmm.
thinking my wife and I would, you know, no longer have any children. We're 45 years of age at the time. Now I'm 66.
Okay.
And, but it has been with me all these years, you know, almost 21 mm-hmm. years. And I have been to confession, have confessed it and talked to the priest about it. But it's just, you know, it's just something that is there all the time.
Yeah.
And I was just curious about it, how your response to the email from earlier, how that would apply to my situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my heart goes out to you, Mark. Yeah, my heart goes out to you because I haven't been through that myself, so I don't know from personal experience, but I would assume that there would be this sort of, that you would experience a kind of pang of sadness or regret that, you know, you live with it every day, and not just in the sense of maybe some more children that God might have blessed you with who aren't here, but also every time you and your wife are together, I wouldn't be surprised if that thought is in your mind, you know, that you're, you know, that it may diminish the happiness that you would otherwise feel because that's in the back of your mind. I don't know, but I'm assuming that
that
would be there.
That's, you know, somewhat close, I guess. You know, like I said, you know, we were mid-40s, and our 5th child was born many years after the 4th one,
mm-hmm.
and it's our only girl, and it's like, it was such a blessing, but, you know, we were thinking, okay, well, it's a, you know, past the prime time to have a child, and
right.
we were just afraid of, you know, health risks and things like that for mother and child, and
right.
so, you know, and that was, at the time, that was probably the easiest solution. And like, but like you said, it's something that has been with me all this time now.
Yeah, I understand.
There's not a day that I probably don't think about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I understand. And I, as I say, my heart goes out to you. So first thing I would say, Mark, is that that's a good sign. That means that your conscience is functioning properly. Because if it's bothering you, even long after the fact, that means that your conscience is alive and well. And it's telling you something that you should heed. Now, you already did it because you went to confession, and that's good. So you've been forgiven, and you brought it to the foot of the cross and left it there. But, you know, as a human being, you're going to experience emotions, and we can't help that, you know, but how do we process that? So I would offer you the point that I made to the gentleman who wrote in, and that is simply this. And keep in mind, the church does not require this of you. The church does not say that you must do this. It is an option, however, to have a reversal. And the way I look at it, it seems to me that, as I was saying earlier, that even though at the age of 66, and presumably your wife is probably of a similar age, so the likelihood of having a child at this stage of life is virtually nil. Probably no way it could happen. More, you know, for due to her physiological development as opposed to your own. But if you were to decide to have a reversal and go through the unpleasantness that's involved with that, my thinking is, although it's not required, it would be a meritorious act of restitution. You would be doing something that would help to put things right again. If you break somebody's plate glass window because you're, you know, pitching golf balls in your front yard, you pitch a little too hard and it knocks out your neighbor's window. Well, the only just thing to do is to pay for a replacement of the window. So in a certain sense, I would say that to me might help you overcome this sense of uneasiness or regret or however you would explain it, because then you'd be able to say, Lord, not only do I know that you've forgiven me, but I also have gone the extra mile to demonstrate that I'm really sorry for this. And even though it doesn't mean that I'm going to have any children, nonetheless, I tried to repair what I had done wrong. And I think there's great value in that.
Right. I will seriously consider it and give it and pray about it. And I appreciate your time. And your show is awesome. I listen to you just about every day, and I really enjoy it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mark. I appreciate that very, very much. I do indeed. 888-914-9149. How about Jesus now, listening in North Carolina? Good morning, Jesus.
Good morning, sir. Nice to talk to you.
Yeah, you too.
I just wanted to ask you, what were your thoughts about? I'm a catechist at my church. I've been doing it for about 3 years. The adult faith formation and I'm in the Spanish ministry.
Okay.
And I'm concerned because most of the people that go through the class and they receive the sacraments, they don't come back to church, or they, you know, you see them every once in a while at Mass, but it seems like they go back to the world, you know, to the doing the things that they were doing, or they just got their paper and sometimes you don't see them again.
Mm-hmm.
And my concern as a catechist is that I want something so they can go back and keep the things that they study, the things that we taught them in the back of their head, or keep them fresh. And I thought about creating a podcast about that. Something that I'm married. I got 4 kids and I'm almost 50 years old, and I feel like I have some time, but I'm just kind of nervous about it. I'm thinking of doing something every week, like a 10-15 minute podcast, just something, you know, to refresh.
To reinforce.
I don't know what. Yes, that's what was the word. Yes, sir. Yes.
I think it's a good idea, especially for your audience. Your intended audience doesn't have a lot of, those whose primary language is Spanish, they don't have a lot of resources available to them, certainly not as many as are in English. So something, especially if it's for people that you know or people that you encounter in your parish, I think that would be a good thing. I think you could really do a lot of good.
Right, right. And I've been doing a lot of research, and really it doesn't cost anything other than just like at the time, but all my kids are grown, you know, it's not like I would be taking time from my family.
No, that's good. I think it's a good thing. So there are a lot of different podcast platforms, and the technology is already in place now. So really it's kind of a push and play kind of thing. And so I would suggest, if you really feel drawn to it, try it, see how it goes. It may turn out wonderfully well. It may work out well for a while. You may decide this is not what I want to do, but you'll never know until you try it. You know?
Right. Well, thank you very much. And I'm gonna do this. I'm gonna try this.
Cool. Yeah. Let me know how it goes. Before you go, I just want to mention a resource that I wrote that will help you if you're interested. You could use it as a resource if you wanted to, and maybe even share from it. But it's a book I wrote called ¿Dónde está eso en la Biblia? And if you're interested in seeing it, you can go to the show page, relevantradio.com/Patrick. And there, the button's just below where it says The Patrick Madrid Show. You see where it says links. There's a link that will take you to my website. If you go there, go to the book section, and you'll see it. It's right on top. And it'll give you a description. It's all in Spanish. And it'll give you a description of what's in there. But to summarize it, it covers about 50 different doctrinal issues that Catholics typically get challenged on, or maybe they don't fully understand it. And it will help whoever reads it, from a biblical standpoint, to understand the basis of the Catholic faith and how to respond to those who might challenge it. So if you're looking for a resource that can help you maybe get a head start on what you're trying to do, I would say check it out. ¿Dónde está eso en la Biblia? Okay?
Okay, very good. Well, thank you. Thank you very much for what you do and Relevant Radio. It's great. God bless you.
Thank you. We appreciate it. Thanks very much. Somebody is asking me, someone sent me a note that said, is Scott Hahn's story in my book, Surprised by Truth? The answer is no. He actually wrote the foreword to that book, but his story is contained in a book that he and his wife co-wrote. It's called Rome, Sweet Home. So if you're interested in Scott's own story, if you want the book version, it's Rome, Sweet Home. And if you want the video version, or rather the audio version, that is called Conversion of a Protestant Minister. And it was recorded at my parish in Riverside, California in 1989, the summer of 89. I was working at Catholic Answers, and we brought Scott Hahn out to Southern California to give a talk, the first one that really anybody had ever heard in any national sense. And it was recorded. We didn't record it, but a third party recorded it for us. And the copies of that talk just went around the world. It was just an amazing phenomenon. So if you haven't heard Scott Hahn's conversion testimony that was given at St. Francis de Sales Catholic Church on Lime Street in Riverside, California, in the summer of 1989, you owe it to yourself. I believe it's on YouTube now, so it's free and easy to get. But that's definitely something that I would share with other people. All right, so I can't quite tell whether or not we're going to go to another phone call, but maybe we are. Let's take a chance here. In Elgin, Illinois, we'll go to an unknown caller. Good morning and welcome. Maybe that caller wasn't ready. Okay, let's try a different caller. Let's go to John in Wisconsin. Good morning, John.
Hey, Pat, how are you?
I know I am well.
Don't have much time left.
No problem.
Yep, thank you. Thank you for taking my call. Hey, I just wanted to comment on that last gentleman who had the vasectomy. I am in a similar situation. Uh-huh. I just felt that, instead of going through the reverse of that procedure to perhaps trust on the efficacy of confession, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we are not saved by works, but by cooperating with his grace. And I felt, my own opinion, that maybe reversing it might be a little extreme. That's all.
Mm. Well, fair enough. I've never had the procedure one way or the other, so I can't speak from experience, but I have talked to if I say many men, I think I could safely say maybe as many as a dozen over the years for whom it was really life-changing for them to have the reversal done. In some cases, because it allowed for more children to come into the family if they were young enough. But regardless, them sharing their testimonies with me have made a deep impression upon me that it really helped heal them. And so far from being extreme, I guess I would disagree with you on that. I don't think it's at all extreme. I think it's one of those things that if the person feels called to do that, if the man feels called to do that, that he should follow that. It may not be the case for everybody, but I see a lot of value in it. I really do. Hey, John, thank you. I appreciate your listening to the phone call. I'm listening to the show, and thanks for the phone call. We're out of time. So that happens every show. We run out of time, but we'll be back at it again soon enough. And if in the meantime you want to send me a message, just go to the show page, relevantradio.com/Patrick. You can send me an email there. Click on connect and you can send it to me. If you want to send me a message on Twitter, I'll look for you there too, at Patrick Madrid. We'll stay in touch. And until then, I'll pray for you. Please pray for me. God bless you.